Starting tomorrow, All Things Considered will present a 10-part weekly series about Yiddish radio programs that aired in New York City in the 1930s and 40s. Before we do, a few minutes in the way of introduction to Yiddish. Yiddish was the language that Jewish immigrants brought to this country from Eastern and Central Europe. Written in the Hebrew alphabet, it is a thousand-year-old offshoot of German. Here's a Yiddish proverb.
Lois des Kalb laufen, es wird sich aushungern, wird es allein heimkommen.
That's a bit of guidance on child rearing, read by our colleague Murray Horwitz, from the book Words Like Arrows, a treasury of Yiddish folk sayings. In English, it means this.
Let the calf run. It will come home when it's hungry.
Here's the lead sentence from a recent news story in the Vorwärts, a Yiddish language newspaper published in New York. The story was about the Swiss referendum approving membership in the United Nations.
Geneva, die besitzneutrale Schweiz, hat in Anhieb von heutigen Chodesch in a Referendum über Land, nach zendlicher Jahren von internationaler Isolation, beschlossen zu werden Mitglied von der UN.
Now, there is a lot of German in there, obviously. John McWhorter, a University of California linguist, hears Yiddish as essentially a German dialect.
I personally process it as a very interesting German, and it's even more like the German dialect spoken in the south of the country, which is what it originally came from.
But there is a lot to the language that is not German. In that news story about Switzerland, for example, the phrase that meant this month was
Heitigen Chodesh.
You don't hear the German word for month, Monat, but the Hebrew word Chodesh. The Yiddish vocabulary includes a lot of Hebrew words, also words from Slavic and Romance languages. And John McWhorter says that because so many Yiddish speakers spoke other languages, such as Polish, the grammar of Yiddish is different from German grammar.
In a good old-fashioned German dialect, you say, I wash myself, you wash yourself, he washes himself. In Yiddish, you say the equivalent of, I wash himself, you wash himself, he washes himself. There's just this one himself. And the reason for that is because that's the way Slavic languages like Polish work as well.
The story of Yiddish in America is like that of many immigrant languages. In my family, grandparents doted on you in Yiddish, parents kept secrets from you in Yiddish, uncles mystified you with punchlines delivered in Yiddish to jokes with long English setups. So far, so ordinary. Many a family has cast aside a mother tongue in the course of linguistic assimilation, a mother tongue that lived on in the old country. Not Yiddish, whose old country was never really a country, but a civilization that spread across the map of Europe from the shores of the Baltic to the Black Sea, through the provinces of Russian czars and Habsburg emperors, a civilization that was erased by the Nazis. Samuel Norwich runs the Forward Association, which publishes the Yiddish paper that carried the item about Switzerland, as well as an English language weekly and a Russian language newspaper. He is a scholar of Yiddish, which was his mother tongue.
11 million people spoke Yiddish in 1939, most of them in Eastern Europe, but that community had sent its migrations to North and South America, to Australia, to South Africa, and Yiddish was spoken in all of those places as well. And of course, also to Eretz Yisrael, to Palestine, to the predecessor to today's Israel.
We're talking about people who spoke Yiddish. To what extent did they read and write Yiddish?
This was a literate society. Most of them could read it. Most of them could write it. It was also a multilingual society. Yiddish speakers everywhere at all times spoke more than one language. And many of them were also literate in more than one language. The most learned among them could read and write Hebrew. In the 1950s, Judd Teller, an American Jewish writer, pointed out that in his lifetime, the place of Yiddish and Hebrew in Jewish consciousness was essentially being reversed. When he was a child in the 1930s, every Jew spoke Yiddish. That was nothing unusual. But if you found a Jew that was literate and spoke Hebrew, that was a sign of learning. I should say one other thing. There were lots of Jews who deplored Yiddish as the untutored language. Even they wouldn't even acknowledge that it was a language. Many of them regarded it as nothing but a malformed German, as an uneducated dialect of German. And it was referred to as jargon, In Russian, even in Yiddish itself, some of the greatest Yiddish writers affectionately referred to the language as jargon.
Over the next several weeks, we're going to be hearing about Yiddish radio programs in New York City in the 1930s, 40s, even the 1950s. Give us a sense of what Yiddish-speaking society was like in New York, what its cultural assets were in New York City, where these radio programs were being produced.
The people who spoke Yiddish encompassed within them a multitude of trends, of ideas, of futures. And these were futures that were often clashing with one another. Yiddish speakers were learned Hebraists, Talmudists, steeped in the religious culture of our people. Yiddish speakers were anti-religious socialists who sought to put all of that religious heritage behind them. Yiddish speakers were cosmopolitans looking to swim in the sea of New York. Yiddish speakers were plain folk who had their private language in addition to the language of the street, which was English.
A Yiddish reader in New York City some decades ago would have no trouble finding a Yiddish daily newspaper and could select from more than one.
You said it. In the teens, in the 20s, there were 7 daily Yiddish newspapers. The largest, the Vorwärts, had a circulation larger than that of the New York Times in the early 1920s. It was the first American newspaper in any language to be published nationally, long before USA Today. There were, in fact, 140 different Yiddish publications published in New York. The Vorwärts was only the largest, but there were others, daily newspapers. The Tog, Zionist and liberal. The Morgenfreiheit, communist. The Freie Arbeiterstimme, anarchist. The Morgenjournal, orthodox. These all in Yiddish, all speaking to essentially the same community, but expressing an entirely different past and an entirely different future.
I just want to ask you about one other point, which is what I think of as the curtain call that Yiddish has enjoyed in the past several years. It's encore. People who may be descended from parents or grandparents who spoke Yiddish as a language seem to have returned to it in small but avid numbers to become neo-Yiddishists, or whatever we would say.
There are more and more young people studying Yiddish on college campuses around the U.S., at the Sorbonne, at Oxford, at a number of Israeli universities, even at Polish and German universities. Yes, there is a revival of interest in the language, but we should keep in mind that even in spite of the growth of the number of people studying it on college level, there is an overall demographic decline. And in the span of maybe 40 years, there's been a reduction of several million in the total number of Yiddish speakers. It still functions as a second language for a lot of Jews in America. And it is a source of interest in klezmer music, in these radio programs that you're going to be broadcasting. But it is definitely a language in decline.
Samuel Norwich of the Forward Association in New York. By the way, the Forward owns one of the radio stations that we'll be hearing about in the coming weeks in our series on Yiddish radio, WEVD. The call letters stand for Eugene Victor Debs, the 5-time socialist candidate for president.